This is a verse that saddens me. I'll read it. It's in 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 1. Now King David was old and stricken in years, says the King James Version. And they covered him with clothes, but he got no heat. I'll read it from the New American Standard. Now King David was old, advanced in age, but they covered him with clothes, but he could not keep warm. The expression stricken in age is more properly translated, often advanced in age. It means you've gone up. And that expression is used mostly in the Bible for people over the age of 80. It's very seldom used for somebody under 80. And for instance, it was used of Abraham in Genesis chapter 18, verse 11. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, says the King James Version. And it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Read that same verse in the Complete Jewish Bible. Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years. Advanced in years. Sarah was past the age of childbearing. And it referred to that to Joshua. You remember when Joshua was there in Joshua chapter 13 and verse 1. King James Version reads, "Now Joshua was old and stricken in years." See, years don't strike you. I'm sorry. We just get old. But they don't necessarily strike you. Because David was stricken, you know, or advanced, it means advanced in age. Now, and he was stricken, and the Lord said to him, "You are old and stricken in years, and there remains yet much to do, you know, for the land to be possessed." Now in Joshua 23, in verses 1 and 2, after a long time had passed, and the Lord had given Israel rest from all her enemies, all their enemies around them, Joshua by then old. Now I'm reading from the New International Version, and well advanced in years. He summoned all Israel, their elders, their leaders, their judges, their officials, and he said to them, "I'm old and advanced in years. I'm old." And then he wanted to, you know, we got to take care of this. And how old was Joshua? Well, by that time, in chapter 23, he had to be close to 100 years old. He had to be 100 or more, because in Joshua 24, in verse 29, here's what we read. "After these things, Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. He lived to be 110 years old. You know, Moses lived to be 120. So he died. Now, let's go back to this statement. Now, David was old and advanced in years. How old was he? How old was he? He was 70. He was probably in his 71st year. And we see that from 2 Samuel chapter 5. 2 Samuel chapter 5, verses 4 and 5. David was 30 years old when he began to reign. And he reigned 40 years. So if you're 30 and you reign a total of 40 years, in Hebron he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months, 7.5 years. And in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years. So that's 40.5 years, and he was 30 years old when he took over the kingship. He ruled over all Israel and Judah. Now, what it shows, let's read this now. Verse 1. "Now David was old and advanced in age, and they covered him with clothes, but he could not keep warm." Now what this shows is that David now had become very weak. Too weak. Too destitute of energy to be able to carry on, number one, to carry on the government, to take care of his duties, or to even keep himself warm in bed. And it implies he was bed. Now, when it says they covered him with clothes, It doesn't mean, you know, a suit or, you know, clothing or a shirt, put another shirt on him. It meant bedclothes. Bedclothes. They covered him with clothes that he, and so he did not get warm. So he implies bedclothes, so it implies that he was bedridden at this time. Or at least that he was lying down and could no longer keep himself warm with bedclothes. Doesn't mean regular clothes. It's a type of bedclothes you see in 1 Samuel chapter 19, verse 13, when it says, Michal took the household idol. She, remember, David had escaped. And she said, get out of the window. That, you know, my father Saul is sending his men to capture you, David. Get out. So David goes and she grabs the little statue there and she puts it in bed. And what does she do? Then Michal took the household idol and put it in bed, placed some goat hair on its head and covered it with garments, clothes. Meaning, let me read that in the another translation. And Michal took the teraphim and laid it in the bed and put a pillow of goat's hair and then at the head and covered it with clothes. That is with bed clothing, like covers. Like David would wear in bed. So they would deceive people that, you know, so that they think David's lying there. So David was in his 71st year. And his aged condition, he's already running. He can't even keep himself warm. What does it mean when you can't keep yourself warm? It means you cannot metabolize food. You cannot metabolize energy. You cannot burn energy fast enough to keep yourself warm. Your body has to burn energy to keep you warm. And it burns energy through your thyroid gland right here along the sides. And if the thyroid gland begins to wear out, it's not fast enough, it's not burning quickly enough, you'll feel cold. And by the way, when you're not moving muscle movement like I'm doing now, you know, I move my hands and everything, and you can shift from time to time in your seat, so you're moving a little bit. That keeps you warm because you're now burning energy. As you burn energy, you feel warm. And if you burn enough energy, like getting up and running and so on, you'd start to sweat. You'd burn so much, the body now say, you're overheating me, I got to cool you down. But David could not keep warm when he was still. He didn't burn enough. Even with the covers, he couldn't keep warm. Even with the covers, he couldn't keep warm. And why was that? Now, his aged condition was not, it was not the natural result of his extreme age, because he wasn't that old. It was the consequence arising out of the hardships of this man's life. Because he had endured a very agitated, restless, very stressful life. You remember this statement. This is in 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 7. When David was first working for Saul, and he was going out as a military commander and everything, and the women sang this song. Remember this statement? Saul has killed his thousands. But David has killed his 10,000s, tens of thousands. You remember that statement? Now, I want you to think about this. You're in war. You kill a lot of people in battle. Now, you didn't sit in some booth somewhere and push a button that sent a nuclear bomb or a missile flying across the ocean and blowing up people. You didn't have some kind of GPS system to guide these launching missiles to some place. You didn't sit on a hill and press a button for a cannon to shoot and lob a thing. No. In those days, it was hand-to-hand combat. It was facing a guy who's trying to kill you, and you're trying to kill him. You've got a sword, or you've got a spear, and you've got a club, and you're fighting, and you are there in a struggle, a physical struggle. Your adrenal glands are pumping hard. Your body is alert. Your thyroid is going. Oh, you're running. Oh, your heart is pounding. You're running the whole system as fast as it can go with as much energy as it can take. Think about that. A man who's killed, you know, that may be an exaggeration. He's killed his 10,000s. I don't know. Is that an exaggeration? Is it just a song? But evidently, he killed a lot of people in war. So much so that God said, you know, he's a bloody man. I'm not going to let David build my temple. He's got too much blood on his hands. He's killed so many people. And many of them, most of them were in battle. Where a guy is trying to kill you. I can tell you, if somebody's trying to kill you, what would you... You're in a state of panic, and your adrenal glands are running, and your adrenaline is high, and your energy is high. Somebody's trying to kill you, hand-to-hand combat. Now, beyond that, any soldier, I don't care, you know, even with our modern weapons, our soldiers in Iraq, in Iran, and Afghanistan, Afghanistan and Iraq, and other places. A soldier's life is a life of extreme hardship. You don't always eat when you want to. You don't always eat the kind of foods you want to. I've talked to numerous people who have been in Vietnam and in Korea. You know, you're out there in the fields, and you're picking up a can, as one man told me. He said when he got back from the Vietnam and he was walking the streets of his town, and he walked into a restaurant for breakfast, and he said, I'd like to have a couple of eggs, you know, fried eggs over easy, you know, and toast. And he said, man, I sat down, the toast was warm, the eggs were fresh and warm. He said, it's like, this is like wonderful. I can eat this is just wonderful. And I said, what did you eat before? He said, we ate eggs out of a can. You opened the can, and there was a boiled egg had been boiled and put in the can for you to keep from spoiling. You opened it up, and you ate it. It was cold. You ate whatever kind of thing was. Everything was in a can, maybe a piece of bread. Everything was in cans that you had with you, and you ate that. That's the life of a soldier. It's a life of hardship. It's a life of hardship. Deficient diets, not enough rest, often unsanitary conditions. As he said, you know, when he got, he said, there were a couple of things I missed when I got back to America. He said, I was walking on the streets of my town, and I'm sitting there having this breakfast, and there's something missing, several things missing. Number one, he realized, I'm not holding my gun anymore, because I slept with my gun, my rifle. I walked with my rifle. I held my rifle all the time. It was in my hands all the time. I knew how to take it apart, put it together, grease it up, oil it, make sure all those bullets could go in and out of it. I'm not having to hold my rifle anymore. And then he said, was something else missing? Oh, yeah. The bugs are not crawling on my skin anymore. Because when you're in the jungle and little bugs are crawling and the Viet Cong are walking by you, you don't say, you don't slap the bug and try to kill it. You don't say, get out, no, stop, you know, ow. You just sit there and the bugs crawl on you in the jungle, and sometimes when you're there, the leeches get on you, and you just learn to live with it because somebody is out there wanting to kill you if they can spot you in that spot. It's a life of hardship. Bad diet, not enough rest, unsanitary condition. Remember, David he was on the run from Saul for quite a while, you remember? He was running from Saul. Saul had soldiers out. You remember, David was hiding in the caves down in En-Gedi, and then he saw Saul go into one of the caves to relieve himself, if you remember that story. And David saw that. And then David had to flee from Absalom. He was running from Absalom. And when Absalom took it, and not only did David have that situation, but he had the stress of your own son turning against you, trying to take the kingdom from you. And he had that stress. And then his son died. He's fighting his son. His generals are fighting his son's army. And they kill his son. And David is now, you know, he went through all the weeping. Oh, Absalom. They finally said, straighten up. Don't start crying for Absalom. He was our enemy. Straighten up or you're going to lose everybody. So David had to straighten up. Besides this, David was quite a man. He had many wives. He had many children. I want to read from 1 Chronicles chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. You want to see who David was? Now these were the sons of David who were born to him in Hebron. Now here's the Chronicles, his chronicle, where the sons were born when he was in Hebron. The firstborn was Ammon by Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess. The second was Daniel by Abigail, the Carmelitess. The third was Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, the king of Geshur. The fourth was Adonijah, the son of Haggith. The fifth was Shephatiah by Abital. The sixth was Itrim, his wife Eglah. Six of them then were born in Hebron, and there he reigned 7 years and 6 months. And in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years, and these were born to him in Jerusalem: Shimeah, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon, four by Bathsheba, the daughter of Amiel, and Ibar, Eshma, and so on and so on. He goes on, and you'll see all the names of these. Nine more. All these were the sons of David, besides the sons of his concubines. Besides the sons, these are from his wives, besides the sons that he got from some of his wives' servants. Because, you know, each one of the king's wives had servants. Women servants. They were concubines. And they said, why don't you have a son by one of my concubines? Why don't you have... All these were the sons of David, besides the sons of the concubines. And Tamar was their sister. Looked like one girl out of all these boys. He had all these sons. Only one daughter is named here, Tamar. So, here's David. He's shivering in bed. He cannot keep warm. They put the blankets. His own thyroid cannot generate enough heat. So what do his servants do? So his servants say this. So his servants said to him, verse 2, "Let them seek a young virgin for my lord the king, and let her attend to the king and become his nurse." Let her stay. She serves the king. She will be here for the king. "And let her lie in your bosom, that my lord the king may keep warm." Now this was not an unusual thing to do. Back in that time, it was looked on that a young person could bring, you know, if you got next to them, you could be taking in of their heat, the body, their heat, and that would be healing to you. Many physicians believe that. There were ancient writings about this in ancient places where they believed that if you had this young person next to you, it could be a kind of a healing thing. So the physicians, you know, recommended it. And for ages, by the way, it did it. And the idea was that your departing vitality might be preserved if you could have someone else's generation of heat. It would save your thyroid from being overly taxed, and it would just strengthen you, and it would communicate strength and warmth and youthful vitality back to you if you could have this young person be with you. So they sent off. So in verse 3, they searched for a beautiful girl. Now, David probably said, "No, don't bring some ugly woman here, you know. Bring a beautiful girl." So they searched for a beautiful girl throughout the territory of Israel. And they found Abishag the Shunammite, and they brought her to the king. The girl, verse 4, was very beautiful. And she became the king's nurse and served him. But the king did not know her. The, 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 The actual Hebrew word is no, meaning cohabit, no in a sexual way. He did not have sex with her. He did not cohabit. She slept with him. He's old. He's tired. He's worn out. She just slept in his bosom. She kept him warm. She got him food. She brought him things. You know, you need this. You want something to drink. You want something to eat. You know, you need to go here. You need help getting out of bed. You want to go to the bathroom. You want to do this. Let me help you. She attended to King David in his time. Now, you might wonder about it, but many kings of Israel and Judah did not live long. Did you know that? It appears, and I'm subject to correction because I didn't do maybe all the research on this, but no king of Israel or Judah after David, with the exception of Solomon and Manasseh, exceeded 60 years of age. Now, I'm subject, if you find that, I would like to know if anybody comes up with something that they could. But I think it's only Solomon and Manasseh that went beyond 60 years old. You're king of Israel or Judah. And you can't make it beyond that? And here was Joshua. Joshua went, to 110. Moses, 120. So here's David. He's got Abishag, this young girl that's with him, and she's there. Now, David is in bed. He is not well. He is not attending. He cannot carry on the duties of the monarchy. He cannot. He can barely get out of bed. He can't keep himself warm when he's in bed with all the clothes on him. So, in verse 5, now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, remember, we saw Adonijah. He's listed among all those of David's sons, you see. Adonijah, the son of Haggith, he's older than Solomon, exalted himself. That's what it says in verse 5. Saying, I will be king. Hey, the king can't do it. I'll step in. I'll be the king. Now, David, how many sons did David have? Oh, you see, I have all these lists of sons. He jumps up and he says, I'll be the king. I know what to do. I'll be the king. So he prepared himself, verse 5, chariots, horsemen, with 50 men to run before him. Let's get this. He walks in. Now, it's an interesting thing how people often yield to somebody who is overly bold, presumptuous, and decides. And, oh, okay. You just give somebody an order. All right, you do this, and you do that. And, oh, okay, all right. Oh, I want 50 men here, and you guys do that. I want the horses up here, get the chariots. Oh, okay, all right, okay. And so they're used to it. I mean, after all, he's the king's son, and, he's going to be the king. He decides he's going to be king. Now, I wonder where Jesus got this little phrase. When Jesus was talking, he said, whosoever exalts himself shall be humbled. Remember when Jesus talked about when you go to a wedding, don't go up and take the chief seats. Don't go there because somebody more important than you can come in and you'll be embarrassed when they tell you, hey, how'd you mind giving your seat to so-and-so? Because we prepared that for him. And he said, you'll be embarrassed when you walk all the way back to the back seat. He said, stay in the back, and then they might come to you and say, hey, no, we wanted you to come up here and sit up here with the bride and groom. And you say, oh, thank you. And then he said, then you'll be exalted in front of everyone. But here's this guy. He doesn't wait to be called. He jumps up, I'll be the king. And in verse 6, his father, very interesting statement here in verse 6. I want you to read it. His father, the King James says, his father never displeased him. His father did not displease him. Really, let me read it in different translations here. His father never crossed him at any time. Never crossed him. Let me read it in another translation. This is the Christian Standard Bible. But his father never once reprimanded him. never once reprimanded him. Let me read it in the New English translation. His father never corrected him. He was never corrected, never reprimanded. Actually, the Hebrew word means to rebuke or to pain. You can pain somebody with a rebuke. He was never rebuked. He was never told no. He was never instructed. He was never disciplined. Never disciplined. And the Hebrew uses the word, he did not correct him, quote, from his days. That's the Hebrew expression. He was never corrected from his days, meaning he never was from the time he was a little kid, from his earliest days, or you could translate it ever in his life. Never in his life was he ever corrected and told no. Never was he reprimanded and said, you shouldn't do that. And verse 5 goes on, see? Verse 6, his father never crossed him at any time by asking, why have you done so? Let me read that in other translations. His father never reprimanded him saying, why did you act that way? Why did you act like that? Why did you do that? That's not the right thing to do. Reprimand. Now, it doesn't mean you take, you know, some people had a philosophy of child rearing that was pathetic, and some of us fell for it, and it was a hit, hit, hit. And some parents thought the way to do child rearing is to hit. Well, hitting does nothing. It's what is it? Unless you're instructing and teaching, it's mostly instruction, and reprimand, and correction, and sometimes punishment if they don't learn from correction. Now, his father never corrected him, says the New English translation, by saying, why did you do such things? He was also very handsome, and he had been born right after Absalom. Okay, Absalom was older. Remember, Absalom was a fantastically handsome guy. David was handsome himself. You remember, David was ruddy and energetic. You remember, David also was fighting from the time he was a young kid. He said, I've fought lions and bears. They came in to get my father's sheep, and I beat them. Well, yeah, think about it. You're going to fight a bear? And he said, I can kill a bear with a bare hand. Talk about energy. Talk about adrenal rush. Talk about thyroid usage. Talk about running your heart and your... Now he's 70 and a half years old, and he's worn out. So Adonijah said, I'll be the king. He was never disciplined. He was a very handsome man. He was born after Absalom. Verse 7. And he conferred with Joab, the son, I'm reading from the New American Standard Version, he conferred with Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and with Abiathar, the priest, and following Adonijah, they helped him. You know, can you guys come be with me now? There's a priest here, or you're a priest, and so on. And he got on their side. And Zadok, the priest, Benaniah, the son of Jehoiada, Nathan, the prophet, Shimei and Rei and the mighty men who belonged to David were not with Adonijah. He avoided them. He got these other guys to back him. So there was political intrigue and political conniving, you know, and all that, to see who we can get on our side as opposed to who they can get on their side. And here we are in this massive takeover of the throne of Israel. Massive takeover. So Zadok the priest, you know, they said, we're not with Adonijah. And so what does Adonijah do? He sacrificed sheep, verse 9, and oxen and fatlings by the stone of Zoeleth, which is beside Engrogel. And he invited all his brothers, the king's sons. Now here, he's got all these brothers, but he said, I'll be the king. I'll invite you all. I'm going to have a big sacrifice here. We're going to have a big party, sacrificing all the sons. But I'm going to invite all you guys here to the king's sons and all the men of Judah, the king's servants. He invited all the king's servants. Come on in. We're having this big sacrificial thing. I'm going to do this sacrificing. I'm going to have this priest here with me, and I'm the king. And people, oh, wow, okay, I guess you are the king. But he did not invite, look what he did not invite, verse 10. He did not invite Nathan, the prophet, Benaniah, the mighty men, and Solomon, his brother. He invited all the other brothers. He didn't invite Solomon. Why? Because David had said to Bathsheba, your son will sit on the throne, and he didn't invite him. He invited all the other brothers of David's sons, but not Solomon. Then Nathan spoke to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. So now these guys found out about it. They go to Bathsheba and they said, have you not heard that Adonijah, the son of Haggith, has become king? And David, our Lord, does not know it. David has no idea that this is taking place. Did you hear? He's already declared himself king. He's become the king. He's sacrificing. He's got these people with him. Did you not hear this? Now come, they said to her. Please let me give you counsel. Now here's Bathsheba. Okay, well, what shall I do? And save your life and the life of your son Solomon. In that time, if you were a monarch, you took over the throne, you had to get rid of the main competition. And since some people were around who heard that David had said to Bathsheba, your son will sit on the throne, we're going to have to kill that son. So he's no longer around to be on the throne. There's nobody can claim the throne. They're all gone. And what does that do then? Well, then I'm the only one. You can't stop me now. I'm going to take over. So it was not just a matter that you better get the throne. It was also a matter you better save your life. If you want to live, Bathsheba, and you want to save your son's life, you better follow our instruction. There's a lot more to this story and a lot more insights that we need to take a look at. And we'll follow it up in my next sermon.